Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we somewhat politely advise a future dead horse 1d6 suggestions at a time. That's right, we're taking on the hottest topic in role-playing games of, like, 3 weeks ago, the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game, the fourth in a historically silly series of licensed Marvel RPGs. This is a little new for us. I'm sure you're used to the fact that we mostly review older and deader games, but we figured it says right on there that they want to hear what people think of it, and we sort of count as people, so maybe we could finally use our powers of snarky analysis for good. So hey, is it an MCU-level success, or a new universe-level fiasco? Will anyone get that reference, and what can be done to improve it? And by it, I mean the game, and not my reference. So let's make ours Marvel on today's System Mastery. Hey, everybody, welcome back to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse or whatever it is. I'm Jeff, and that's John. And, John, how are you?
You know, personally, physically, currently, I'm doing okay. But yeah, I am, of course, coming to you live from my solitary confinement.
Yeah, no, you're living in a COVID house now. And, well, I didn't want to... specifically name and shame anybody who in either of our houses might have some COVID at the moment. It luckily, thankfully, isn't either of us.
No.
But not really thankfully, because the person who has it is like, you know, a little kid. So that's sad.
I mean, the one nice thing is that at least, like, he has zero symptoms. He is not sick at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that is nice.
It's super, super good. I'm very glad that it's not messing his absolute shit up. I mean, it was his birthday yesterday. It's very sad.
It's terrible. Like, fifth birthday, which means that just dodge the window to get a friggin' vaccine. Because the five is, I believe, the current, you can't have one.
Five is when you can start getting one.
Exactly. So that's just a sad time.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I had to, like, put a mask on and, like, hand off a present to give to him. I couldn't even give him, like, a hug or nothing. It's just real sad. I'm going to miss Mother's Day this weekend, my grandmother's birthday. Everything has gone to shit, but me, personally, I'm great.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. Also, we are back to remote recording, which I do not like. We're trying a new recording setup on my end because, I mean, anybody who's been listening to us for a while can remember the pandemic years and how I sounded like I was the 10th caller.
Oh, yeah. No, you 100%. Whatever the soundboard we had there was, man, it just really dumped your voice.
Yeah. No, it sounded like I was a longtime listener, first time caller, and I had some serious opinions about the Broncos and their chances this year. And I hated it. So this time I just took a chunk of some of the money from our recent royalty statements for the cocktail book, which, by the way, still in stores. Go purchase our fine cocktail guide and our new cookbook whenever convenient to you. And just bought a fucking Zoom, like a good travel podcast recording thing.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying this time. And it's still a little sensitive on the mic. I'm having to stand about a foot away from my microphone right now. I'm gonna take some work. I got the thing like an hour ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll take some getting used to. And honestly, so because we're doing the Marvel playtest, I also feel like, I mean, we decided this beforehand, or at least, honestly, I decided it. I was reading this on...
I'm going along with you on this one. That is right.
I was reading this on the plane to DC when I was going to go visit my family a couple weeks ago and was like, oh my God, I absolutely need to talk about this. But
that's,
I think,
fair.
It's fortuitous, honestly, that we were doing this at the time when all this is happening, because honestly, having playtest rules to go over when we're basically playtesting our new mic setup and having to fucking do remote shit, it's great. They're sloppy, we're sloppy, the whole thing makes sense.
Yeah, so just to be clear on that, yes, we are reviewing the Marvel Multiversal role-playing game playtest rulebook by Matt Forbeck. I know this is way outside the bounds of our usual show. We normally try to do stuff that's significantly out of print so we don't hurt any sales, but come on, it's Marvel. We can't hurt them.
Oh yeah, and the thing is, this is still playtest rules. So mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I don't feel bad for talking about this. I mean, one, that's what the playtests are for, are to be like, hey, this is messed up. This is messed up. You got to fix this. But also, they're charging goddamn $10 for a playtest rules where I was like, fuck you. If you're going to charge me money, I'm going to treat this like a product anyway.
So the first thing that I wanted to note, I already mentioned his name, the author of this one. That's Matt Forbeck, who we are not strangers to. We've reviewed one of his books before. And that would be another superhero book as well. 1999's Brave New World. I don't remember how much you remember about that one.
I mean, a little
bit. 23-year-old book now. But yeah, it was, it's funny in the document of like the first kind of sending out an interview with him to be like, how did you get this project? What are your bona fides? And so on. He mentioned Brave New World as a rules light game that he came out with early on.
Lol.
And I think that's a fascinating definition of rules light.
I would love to know what certain people believe is rules light and what isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's for some people, it must just be like Phoenix Command and below. That's rules light. Anything above that, that's too many rules. You gotta slow down. But I just thought that's worth mentioning that this is a guy who's been around for quite a long time. He's an industry hanger on who basically just gets these jobs by being dependable, reliable, and getting his name out there efficiently. So good mm-hmm. for him. And also, yeah, because it's a playtest, I had initially planned to not be especially harsh with this because I wanted to kind of be constructive. Hey, maybe this guy wants to listen to this. He did specifically request as much feedback as possible.
Yeah. And then, hour of feedback.
Here comes an hour of feedback. But then I made a character for it and I got real angry.
It's one of those things where you can be, you know, in our position and go, oh, I'll be friendly. And then the second mm-hmm. you touch it and you come across some infuriating shit, you're like, oh, God damn it. Fuck you.
Yeah, like I would say the first thing I started to encounter on reading this book was that I felt like I had purchased a book of hastily assembled rules specifically for the playtest. As in, like, this was not ready to be a playtest, and half of this was written pretty much for the play. You know, sometimes you see a movie trailer and there's like 80% of that shit isn't in the movie?
Oh, yeah. No, that was definitely a trailer shot as a trailer.
Yes, yeah, that's kind of the impression that I'm getting here. This really feels like it wasn't written with anything beyond this in mind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the one big thing I've took away reading this playtest is I was like, even when the rules made sense and were good, it still felt like they were working backwards from where they wanted to be, trying to get the rules to work backwards from there. So it's like, oh, we need to work 616 into this. All right, how do I make the dice rules work for that?
And like, part of me wonders if the 616 thing wasn't how he managed to land the pitch, where he was like, I have a great idea that uses dice and references a Marvel thing. And the people at Marvel were like, ooh, he knows a Marvel thing.
Marvel thing.
That's got to become an increasingly less valuable commodity over time, right?
Like, oh, of course.
Now everybody knows who, like, Wong is. We've entered an era where even the deepest cuts of Marvel are, like, well understood by everybody.
Ah.
The only people left who don't understand things about Marvel are people with a movie review to write and a deadline. Because they'll suddenly be like, well, I don't really have a strong opinion about Doctor Strange. How do I get this movie review written? I know, I'll complain about the concept of the cinematic universe. You know, for like six paragraphs. And then I'll be like, also, you know, America Chavez is in this one. Okay, D-minus, bye. I don't know what a multiverse is. How come this didn't reference Into the Spider-Verse? I don't want to have to watch WandaVision, even though I did.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Fucking people and their anger at the Marvel movies. It doesn't matter.
It's off topic. I'm just padding. I apologize. So why don't we talk about that dice mechanic? Because I think that's definitely the first thing that draws your attention when you look through this book.
Of course, when you see that you're like, oh, it's a D616 system. And, you know, obviously, for people that are old hat at role playing, when you see D616, you're like, oh, you want me to get a thing with a 616 result table or something.
I mean, I never had that impression. I always assumed it was going to be a gimmicky collection of D6s because that's just the easiest thing to write. But I have seen the joke a lot on forums and so on of people saying, oh, what do you need, a 616-sided die? What even is that?
Oh, yeah. I was like, well, you roll six D100s and two D8s.
Yeah. Yeah, but that'll get you there.
Honestly, the base rolling mechanic in this, I mean, spoiler alert, might just be my favorite thing in this because it's a 3D6-based system. You mm-hmm. are trying to, you know, roll over a difficulty and you get your roll plus whatever, your stat. Now, yes.
And a modifier that you'll get from your rank system. We'll get to that.
Yeah. But the one special thing is that they have one of the dice is the Marvel die, and the mm-hmm. one's face on the Marvel die counts as a six. So
yes.
At least one of your dice is a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 result, which mm-hmm. means I like that for feeling more powerful, for just skewing the curve that much higher. You know, you're a superhero. You should be able to do that.
And more important, or not more importantly, but as importantly, the six that is the one, so the Marvel face, is like a more powerful six in that when you roll it for anything that's like any kind of result at all, except for one, and we'll get to that in a second, cool shit happens as well. It's not quite a crit. It's sort of a yes and die. If you see that Marvel face come up, you go, oh, neat. So not only does the thing you want happen, but other cool shit starts happening.
Yeah, and the thing is, even if you fail, like if I roll under whatever my result was, but I still got a one on that Marvel die and didn't just critically fail, which mm-hmm. is rolling three ones, I still get a bonus out of it. I fail, but I get something. And so
the other thing is this
game doesn't
really...
The fact that one in six of your rolls is going to have a good thing happen for you is very nice.
Yeah. Like I was about to say, the other thing is that this game doesn't really even have non-critical fails. If you roll under the target number, the effect you want still occurs, but like bad stuff happens or something. The critical result is terrible, terrible things. You know, new enemies arrive, bad stuff happens. That's if you happen to roll all ones. If you just fail, then you still technically accomplish your goal, but bad stuff is going to happen. And if you roll the ultimate thing, which is a 6, a 1, and a 6, the 1 being specifically on that Marvel die, then that's a critical success, unbelievable. I think it's called a fantastic success or a marvelous success.
Well, you get the fantastic roll if you get the 1. The 616 is an ultimate fantastic.
That's what it is, an ultimate fantastic. And then, you know, that's a super crit, good things happen, and it also comes with the bonus effect of it cannot be modified by other effects or by... this game's equivalent of disadvantage, which is called trouble.
Yes.
And also, when you're rolling against a target number. It's just like rolling a d20 in a d20 system. You roll 3d6 plus whatever mod, and then check against a target number.
Yeah. So the the fantastic roll is great when you get that one on the Marvel die. Enjoy that. The ultimate fantastic, you know... just as rare as the botch roll because you've got to get 3 sixes or 3 ones.
Yeah. It does lead to one of my favorites,
but whatever.
It's the same thing. Three individually specific faces on each die. I think it's a 1 in 218 or something like that. I don't remember. Someone else will remember and tell me that was wrong. Anyway, the one of my first favorite early mistakes in the book is right here. So if you're listening for notes, definitely take this one into account. The first thing you say, the best thing about rolling an ultimate fantastic success, is that the storyteller of the game, the narrator, I believe they're called, is not allowed to use the trouble mechanic against you. And the trouble mechanic is, when you have trouble on a roll, you will have to re-roll whatever die would have been most advantageous to you. Whatever single die. If you happen to roll an ultimate fantastic success, even if you had trouble, you don't. You just keep that ultimate fantastic success. But in the examples under trouble and how trouble works, one of them is, should you roll an ultimate fantastic success, the narrator will likely have you re-roll the Marvel die.
Yeah, it is the first thing I tweeted out when I was doing my sort of live read of this. It's like, man, I am fucking like 5 pages into this. Come on.
Yeah, that was weird. The converse of trouble is called edge. If you have edge, then you can pick up any single die and re-roll it after you initially roll your dice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basics of the die mechanic system. After that, you start taking into account things like your rank and your stats to determine what those rolls are going to look like and accomplish.
Yeah. Now, the game has basically classes in addition to rank that is kind of like level, but not really.
Yeah, you have, I think there's like four things counting rank that you have. Rank is, like John was saying, it's kind of like level, but really it's more like power scale of the universe you would like to play in. It's one of my least favorite things here, and basically it boils down to this guy's, the author basically saying, well, yeah, Captain Marvel is way more powerful than Elektra. That's just obvious, and the game needs to reflect that. And I would personally disagree. I don't think games need to reflect that certain characters operate in different power scales than others, because Marvel doesn't often do that. Usually they'll have the characters come up with creative ways so they can play on the same playing field, because otherwise you would have way less team-ups, and those are what are fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's why you can have, you know, your Avengers and your Justice Leagues and things like that, where you've got a team of heroes where you go, yeah, sure, you can have the Hulk and Hawkeye be on the same team, but if you do that in the rank system, you're like, oh, Hulk's like rank 20 or 25, Hawkeye's probably rank 5 or 10, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I even think about, like, my favorite moments in the history of Marvel. Like, okay, Thanos versus Captain America, right? Big, famous, important scene where almost every other member of the Avengers is down. Captain America, and I'm not talking about the movie, I'm talking about the old comic book conflict. Captain America stands up to Thanos, who's just like, what are you going to do? You're a guy. And Thanos throws a punch at him, he blocks it, he dodges them, he starts trying to hit back. He just keeps him busy until, I forget who it is, Adam Warlock or someone shows up and fights. And it's an awesome moment because it reflects the sheer willpower and willingness to fight of Captain America. Here, he would not be able to dodge a Thanos punch.
No.
Thanos would just murder him immediately and would hit for more damage than he has health.
It's real hard when you start looking at, like, especially very far ranks. Because at that point, you'd be looking at Captain America in this game is canonically a rank 15. Thanos, obviously, rank 25, the highest you can get.
Yeah.
And with a 10 rank difference between characters, it really is just like, I will hit you. And unless I roll ridiculously poorly, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And it's going to kill you.
Oh, yeah.
So
because the damage at that point, you're like, oh, I'm rank 10. I do like 3d6 plus 12. And you're like, cool. I do 3d6 plus 72.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has a bit of a problem. I mean, I get it, and I understand that not only is this an interesting concept, and it's probably part of how he sold the game, but it's literally a selling point. It's the first thing we were seeing coming out from this game was like, this game represents the entirety of Marvel, all the way from the super high-powered characters like Captain Marvel, all the way down to the shitty nobodies like Squirrel Girl, which really didn't endear the game to me in the early... Everyone knows, listen to this, knows that Squirrel Girl is not only unbeatable, but also just my personal favorite Marvel hero.
Oh, yeah.
you don't come for Squirrel Girl.
And that's, honestly, it's one of the best arguments against the thing where you're like, all the way down to Squirrel Girl, who's terrible. And you're like, yeah, but she has canonically beaten, like, Doctor Doom, Thanos, and Galactus.
Like, even if you set aside that the Thanos beat from her is a total joke and that the Galactus one is literally her just telling the story of how she beat Thanos and him doing that, ha-ha, what a tool thing, the Doctor Doom one is straight up her introduction.
Yeah, that was not a joke. That was her beating Doctor Doom.
She shows up, she covers him in squirrels, he doesn't have a defense for being covered in squirrels, and so he surrenders. But, I mean... even that, setting aside, it's a joke, you know, I know she's kind of a silly character, but really, when you're looking for a person to punching bag on in Marvel, it's Stiltman. Use Stiltman.
Yeah, I mean, Stiltman is basically Marvel's kite man.
Yeah, just say all the way from Stiltman to Cat. Don't even try and put Squirrel Girl in your game. She's unclassifiable by your pointless rank system. She exists above it. And I noticed that later, when I saw the same basic point being made again, it had been changed out from Squirrel Girl at the bottom to another. I was like, I don't know, Mockingbird or someone else who was just like a fight person.
Yeah.
So I don't know if my complaints have already made their way up the chain, or if there's just way more Squirrel Girl defenders than I realized.
The Squirrel Girl defender has logged on.
It's me. I have logged on. Read Squirrel Girl. It's really good.
So you also
the Ryan North Chip Zdarsky stuff. Anyway, go ahead.
You also have an archetype that you choose, which is basically your class.
Yeah.
You are going to pick from Blaster, Bruiser, Genius, Protector, Striker, and the catch-all Polymath.
Yeah. These will control what you gain at each rank in a variety of different locations, and will also address a thing called stat caps, which we'll get to in a second, which might be the most unnecessarily clunky thing about the playtest.
Yeah. It's...
But basically, they will focus your stats in the directions that make the most sense. For example, if you take a genius, then you're going to have a really high, like, ego and logic score. And just to get this out of the way, yes, the stats are six stats that spell Marvel as an acronym.
Yes,
they are
indeed.
They are might, agility, resilience, vigilance, ego, and logic. Ego is probably closest to charisma. Logic is probably closest to intelligence. The rest, for the most part, speak for themselves.
Yep.
With vigilance being more of a mental defense score than like a wisdom thing, but, you know, it's basically like that. Each one of them starts with a cap that is based on what rank you are. And
well,
you
each one
put
has a cap of four, which is mm-hmm. just four humans.
Yes. When you choose, for example, your archetype, let's say you take the Protector archetype, which is not actually what it sounds like. It isn't a tank. It's a support role.
Yes.
It's where they put things like Sue Storm or Doctor Strange go in there, where they don't necessarily spend all their time.
Captain America is a protector.
Yeah. They don't necessarily spend all their time firing beams. They spend more of their time supporting the other party members. That one would raise your ego and, I'm sorry, I'm doing Protector right now. It would raise your, I believe, ego and logic caps, because it's supposed to be kind of the magic-y people, because Doctor Strange and Sue Storm are there.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, for example, if you were to take a Bruiser, it's probably just going to raise your might and agility caps. And by caps, what we don't mean your stats go up. We mean your capacity to invest points in that range go up.
Yeah. So normally, your cap is like, okay, you have a four cap for everything. Then, mm-hmm. Depending on what archetype you pick and what rank you are, the two abilities for that archetype get raised to a rank cap. So if you take genius and you have vigilance as and logic mm-hmm. get raised and you're level 10, then your
rank
cap
10,
is now a 7.
Mm-hmm.
There's a entire chart for what rank you are and what your new score cap is. But
yes,
it means everything else still capped at 4. That's the human maximum. But you can go above that with those two things.
Yeah. So I would say, again, if we're trying to be constructive throughout the course of this episode, I would say that rather than making your caps into constantly adjusting variables that actually tend to stay way out above how many points you could reasonably choose to invest in them anyway, it would probably work a lot better if caps just got uncapped by things. Rather than having the cap grow, you just be like, well, choose Protector, and your ego and logic are uncapped, and you can invest as many points as you want to in them now. It would just be simpler.
Well, yeah. The one thing is, if you looked at it and went, oh, you know, it uncaps, or it at least raises the cap on these two traits, and if that's all it was, then it would be, you know, pretty much fine. You'd go like, okay, you know, you're only level 10, obviously, or rank 10, so you're not stupendously powerful, you're not even, you know, Captain America level, so you can only get as high as a 7 in any given stat. And you go, okay, mm-hmm. that sounds fine. The thing is, there are so many other ways that you end up getting stat cap increases that it ends up being just ridiculous, because you don't have enough points to put into stats to ever reach it. You get cap increases from power selection. And if you pick super strength as one of your powers, you get a plus 12 to your cap on might. There is no way you are even going to hit 12 at all in might, no matter what you are.
Yeah, like it's way easier to get stat cap allowance increases than it is to get stat points. The only way to get stat points in the playtest guide, at least, is rank. So if you go from rank 5 to rank 6, you consult a table that tells you what your current actual stat point allotment is, and you increase your stats by that many points.
Yeah,
and there, you can't get them from any of the other selections or anything. Nothing else will actually increase your stats but rank. But rank caps can come from all kinds of sources, and they pretty quickly outstrip the amount of points you could have possibly invested anyway.
Yeah.
It's not super important. Like, it doesn't hurt that if you're playing a Juggernaut type character, you'll have like a might stat cap of like 26, even though you don't have anywhere near that many points. It doesn't hurt anything. It just feels unnecessarily clunky.
Yeah, what it does, though, is it, even though, you know, functionally saying, oh, this takes the cap off versus your cap is now 26, are functionally the same thing as far as the game is concerned. When you look at something and you're like, hey, your cap is now, you know, 18. When you look at that, you go, should I be trying to get that? Is that what I'm supposed to do?
You're talking optimizer hindbrain. That was definitely part of me when I was building my character for this episode's bonus content, was like, oh, my ego cap just went to 12. I should probably do something about that. And then I looked at the points I had. And I was like, oh, wait, I will not get any more points during character creation at all.
Well, it's not optimizing. It's literally just, this game has told me that I can have this. And then when you go look at the rules, you're like, no, I can't. Why did you tell me that?
So the game, you know, it represents like Captain Marvel at being rank 25 and Spider-Man, I believe they put it rank 10.
Which is weird, but sure.
He's their example of the friendly neighborhood hero because he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. This has been a constant problem with Marvel's marketing for forever, is that Spider-Man is, you know, oh, he's the hero that can catch colds and he has teenage problems and he has to deal with the world in a way that other heroes don't and so on. That never really takes into account that also he's near top tier superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
He just has a million fucking powers. He's got, especially by this game's engine, he has so many powers.
Oh, yeah. And the thing
is, because they split up. Yeah.
They had to put all of his powers in one category to just make spider powers. It's like, here's the Spider-Man power set.
That looks very funny when you're looking at the other power categories.
You're like, strength,
battling,
blasting, guns, being Spider-Man. Huh?
Yeah. So, and you're telling me the game does not want me to be Spider-Man, but just to occasionally select from this list of powers that Spider-Man has all of.
Yeah.
And doesn't have anything that isn't in here. Okay, sure. And that's just amusing. That's just part of the playtest functionality, is that there's this one entry in the list called Spider Powers. And you're like, gee, I wonder what I could do with that. So there are other aspects to character creation that you're going to be dealing with as well, but just to be the game suggests that rank 10 is like a good place to start play. It also suggests that while it's okay to have different ranks of power between your different heroes, you should try to keep them within a couple ranks of each other for the game to not completely fall apart.
Yeah, which again just means you're not playing one of those, you know, like any normal team, basically, outside of maybe the X-Men. Because, like, any team I'm thinking of, there's always like, oh, yeah, you know, the Runaways. Yeah, there's one dude who's just kind of smart, and then another person who can cast any spell. And you're like, well, you know.
I would say probably the closest thing to a balanced high-end team is the Fantastic Four. All four of them have a crazy good power, sometimes two. Like, there's really not, I mean, sure, you could point out the Thing is just like big and strong, but he is very big and very strong.
Well, yeah, everyone basically has two good things. They're like, all right, Thing, super durable, super strong. Invisible Woman, invisibility, force fields. Johnny has fire and flying. And then Mr. Fantastic has stretchy and smart.
Yes, exactly. Ultimately, unfortunately, they've kind of made all of them super resilient, so that kind of takes that away from the thing, but, you know, whatever. Meh. But, like I'm saying, it's a close enough thing to a team that it makes sense with this whole, like, rank logic thing. But he also suggests that, in the playtest guide, that because it's a role-playing game, you probably want to see your character go up levels, which we've talked about this a number of times before. That's kind of at odds with how comic books treat superheroes. They tend to arrive out the gate with most of their powers.
Yeah,
you don't really have a situation where Storm comes into the play and she's like, well, I know how to shoot lightning, but I don't know how to make wind yet. Like that's very rare for superheroes. So in his case, he generally tends to suggest, like, pick a top level rank that your game will go to and then start your players like five ranks below that and let them build up to it.
Yeah. Now,
which I don't think is terrible. I do think I'd probably just excise the whole system if it was me, though.
I mean, one of the things with that is you also have to deal with the fact that a lot of powers are rank locked.
Yes, they are.
And that makes it kind of weird to be like, all right, you know, you look at someone who is, I've got one power, but I'm very good at that one power. We talked about this before the show. Havoc. Havoc mm-hmm. is like, yeah, I do some blasts, man. It's all I do.
And they're very good.
But doesn't really have anything else. Isn't a top tier character. You'd be looking at, you know, maybe a 10 rank, but that means he can't get to those rank 15 locked energy blast powers.
Even though they would make the most sense when you're describing Havoc as a character. And you see this again in weird situations. Like, for example, their example of what you should probably aspire to get to, like, rank 5. Honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say it. There's no reason for there to be a rank 1 in this game at all. No Marvel character is described by that. It is useless. It's like they built backwards from 10. They were like, well, we got to populate the 1 through 10 zone. Otherwise, this game will start at 10, and that's dumb. There wasn't a good reason for this. But let's take the street level heroes that are constantly referenced as being perfect for rank 5 through 10. Daredevil. We'll start there. How about that guy? When you look at the fighting with sticks and the being a good leader or dodgy power sets, everything is rank 5 through 15 or above. That when you're looking at, like, well, I would like to play as Daredevil, please. What would my stuff I would need to get to be? Oh, you'll need some rank 15 powers. Well, is Daredevil rank 15? No, he's probably rank 5. This is a real problem. With the problem is that they have mistaken growth and breadth as the same thing, where Captain Marvel is ranked 25, not because she knows lots and lots of powers, but because the powers she does know are fuck off cosmic level really good.
Yeah. And you see it again in the sample characters. They have both Storm and Thor are sample characters in here. Mm-hmm. Storm is rank 15. Thor is rank 20. Sure, fine, whatever. However, Control Weather is a power set, and you at Control Weather 3 stops at rank 15. That's when you can get that. And Control Weather 4 is rank 20, and they gave Control Weather 4 to Thor and 3 to Storm. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm pretty sure Storm's better at controlling the weather than Thor is.
Yeah, and the funny thing about her being only at rank 3 in Control Weather versus his rank 4 is that he has access to powers that she doesn't. And they are, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, stuff that you routinely see Storm do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, granted, weather control is kind of boring. All it does is you can create a storm of 1 mile across, 2 miles across, 3 miles across, or 5 miles across. It's not a very well-written power.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you some bonuses, too, if you're in the middle of a storm and you're casting lightning spells or lightning powers, then it gives you some bonuses. But, like, there's one of the wind control ones in weather control is blow away. So just, like, super high winds to blow someone away. Rank 20. Can't have it if you're Storm.
That's so weird, because Storm wind is like one of her basic things. That's how she flies. I mean, obviously in this game, she's just going to take the flight ability from the utility power set.
Although flight is a weather control power. So if you really want
Yeah. And you can see that there are certain characters in the character creation system they have built where they're like, ah, we're going to have to break our own rules so that this character makes sense.
Yeah, there is a rule in here that, now normally, depending on rank, you have a number of power selections you can make, and that's power sets that you have to choose from. So it'll be like, all right, I'm rank 10, I can pick from 3 sets, and that's the max mm-hmm. anyone gets. Even up to rank 25, the most you can get is 3 power sets.
3 of the sets of powers, which are basically feat trees.
But you can forego a power set selection to get an additional power. So if mm-hmm. you're like, all right, you know, I'm really more of just a lasers guy, I don't really need more than just, say, energy control or something, I can mm-hmm. dump the other two, get 2 more energy control powers, and be done with it.
Yeah.
That being said... each power set gives you a bonus. So, you know, if I choose, let's say, plasticity, because yeah. they need Miss Marvel to be able to work in this, as well as mm-hmm. Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
If I pick that, then I my agility and resilience score caps increase by 6. Lol.
Mm-hmm.
And you add the greater of might or agility to your fight damage with any plasticity powers.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're giving up on a couple of little bonuses that you would have gotten from getting into certain power sets. That being said, like cybernetics, you can add the greater of your agility or logic to your ranged damage with cybernetics powers. And my brother in Christ, there are no ranged damage powers in cybernetics.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing with the fight and range damage that we should probably mention. Those are static numbers that go up, or dice plus a static number that go up based on your rank. So, for example,
yeah,
I am
rank
playing
and archetype.
I assume you're a rank 10 character. You probably have a 3d6 for one of these two damages and a 3d6 plus 4 for the other one of those types of damage. Like if you take a bruiser, you probably have a fight of 3d6 plus 4 and a range of 3d6. That's a neat simplification. No matter what power you do, if you're like, well, I have range damage of 3d6 plus 4 and I get the laser beam power, your laser beam does energy ranged damage. So you don't have to write down a second number. And even if you were to pick up a gun and shoot that, it would do ranged damage.
Yes.
Guns don't even have their own stat lines. They just use your ranged damage line, which sounds like I'm complaining. I am not. That is a good thing. It's
no,
a nice simplification.
I like that simplification.
Yeah. Yeah, that I like.
Now, going to damage, though, there is a thing that this, you can definitely see there were some changes in ideas on how damage should work.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going through initially and you get to the damage section, it's like, oh, there's 10 different damage types. And, you know, they, depending on what those are subtypes, like you acid or fire, the damage type is either going to hit your health or your focus. So someone can attack either, you know, your body or your willpower.
Yeah.
And when you look at a like an ability or whatever, it should say like this does like ranged health energy damage should be how mm-hmm. it goes. Except most of them forgot that. And
yeah, there's a lot of templating issues.
Like some of them will just say like, oh, this does ranged damage. And you're like, you should probably tell me more than just that. Or it'll be like, this does physical energy. And I'm like, did you mean health energy? Because there
also
is no physical damage.
And I know this is a playtest document and this is not final, but the templating in this is just wild, which is part of what led me to think that this might have been written specifically so that they could publish a playtest document. Like,
oh, yeah.
The templating feels random. Like, you'll see three powers in a row that are very similar, where parentheses are placed in various aspects of ranged energy and damage, just sort of willy-nilly. The first one will have all three words in the same parentheses brick, the next one will have just physical in parentheses for some reason, and the third one will have physical energy and then ranged on the outside of the thing. Like, I'm supposed to be doing PEMDAS with these and multiplying them by each other. I don't know. It's just sort of haphazardly written.
Well, yeah, and the fact that the beginning of the book says, oh, it'll do health or focus damage, but
yeah.
One, I never saw a single power that did focus damage, and two,
not a one.
every single one that does health damage says physical outside of the random ones that managed to make it into that change, which I assume were written later, and it's not even by type, because you, like, I'll look at the blade's powers, and the blade's powers will be like, oh, you can slice a guy, and it does fight, physical, slashing damage. You're like, great, cool. What about this other power? That does fight, health, damage. I'm like, you didn't put a subtype, my dude.
And it's funny because the subtypes are, they're clearly TBD. Like, they're going to be, they're the thing that they're going to figure out later. There's only a couple of them in this book, and most of them don't even get used. Energy, slashing, and physical seem to be the only ones you actually see.
Yeah, you get occasionally piercing in the firearms, but out of the 10 damage types listed, you only see 4 in here. Even when you're looking at stuff like energy, beams, and blasts, and you're like, oh, okay, that should just be energy. But one of the damage types is shock, and the lightning bolt damage is not shock, it's energy.
Yeah, it's weird. I didn't see anything in here that was like a defense against a specific type of subtype of damage.
There is one power that gives you pick a damage type and you cut it in half.
Okay, so there is something. That's good. There are two more aspects to character creation that we didn't get into yet, which are backstory and profession. So of these two, when you choose your backstory, this is going to be your character's origin. And it will provide you with not much. It basically will tell you which ones of the archetypes you should probably choose. So, for example, if you would like to play as a protector, it says, like, hey, if you're playing a protector, you should either be from the magic or the supernatural backstories. And if you're not from one of those two, you better have a damn good explanation for your narrator. Which I hate. Anytime a book says, like, you better have a really good argument for this, you should just remove that sentence. Because if the only thing stopping you from doing a thing in a game is a really good argument, then it's not actually against the rules.
Oh, yeah. That means you can do it. It's just we are giving permission to a DM to tell you no.
Exactly. It's dumb. Take it out of there. That's the first thing you should get rid of, especially because it's fucking Marvel. There are 3 million exceptions to every possible storytelling rule you try to come up with.
Yeah.
And people are just going to point that out. They're just going to be like, well, I would like to play as a bruiser, please. I would like to play as a magical bruiser. And they're going to be like, well, the game says I should only let high-tech or battlesuit people be bruisers. Why should I let you be magical? And you just go, fucking Juggernaut. Bitch. Yeah,
there are several, my dude.
Just take it out. Just do yourself a favor now. Don't put that in your book. It's a bad idea. The other thing it comes with is some traits. And traits in this game are the closest thing this game has to feats. But this game's trait list is a mess. For example, the trait that each one of these comes with basically is just stuff that you could do without it being a trait. So, for example, let's say you choose mutant as your backstory. Your character is a mutant. And, you know, it's Marvel, so mutant means something. You know exactly what mutant means. It means X-Men-like power. The same backstory as those guys. The traits it comes with are hounded, because no one likes mutants. No rules associated with hounded. It just means that everyone hates you. X-Gene, which literally just means your powers are mutant powers. Doesn't do anything at all. It just says your powers are mutant powers. And Krakoa, which is, you have access to the island of Krakoa.
Yep, that's it.
Now, that sounds fine. You know, that's fine because that helps define you in narrative as the kind of character that you are. The problem is that, you know, when it comes up with a list of, like, examples, it's like, oh, you know, obviously, Professor X, Storm, Cyclops, Beast, the X-Men. And then you go to the next one down, which is God, where your character is a god because, you know, Thor. And when you look at the trait that God gives you is like supernatural. Your powers are magical in nature now. Great. That's all it needs to give you, because that's all you really need to know about gods in the Marvel Universe. But then when it lists the examples, the first one is Storm. Which is, you know, okay, sure, fine. Sometimes there are storylines where she's a god. There are also storylines where she's a vampire. Whatever. She's been a lot of things. She's Storm. She's been around for a long time. But if you choose God as your thing for Storm, she doesn't have the X gene, and she can't go to Krakoa.
Yeah. And so here's another thing about that. A lot of the ones in here, like if you pick alien, you get alien heritage, and it's just you have either you are an alien or there's some alien in your background. No rules.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Magic, supernatural. You have a supernatural origin. It's, you know, kooky and weird. No rules. Awesome.
Yeah.
God, in addition to God heritage, which is just you come from gods, no rules, and worshipped, mm-hmm. people worship you, no rules, you also get enhanced physique, which increases your might, agility, and resilience caps, and you're treated as one size bigger for picking up, carrying, and throwing things. And I was like, oh, so God's just better than the other ones?
Yeah, now, like, it is. It's just better. That's been the case since Marvel Heroes, superheroes role-playing. Remember how good God is in the Ultimate Powers?
Oh, yeah. But it's one of those things where you're like, I come from weird science. I'm the Hulk or Captain America. I get the trait weird, which is just some people think I'm weird. No rules. Like,
literally, man, just some people think you weird.
Come on. The problem is, these are all traits. And traits are the game's feats, essentially, except half of them are flavor, where it's just, you're weird, no rules. Mm-hmm. And then the other half are like, you get a bonus to throwing things. And also, you are one size larger. And you're like, oh, okay, why are these the same thing then?
Now, the idea, the book tells us, is that they are the same thing, because if you choose the ones that don't do anything or don't do anything but say they're bad, for example, Hounded has no rules associated with it, but it's supposed to be like, you're a mutant, so obviously Bolivar Trask wants to kill you, then the narrator is supposed to take that into account, and every time you point out that you have that negative trait in a situation where it would come up, you're supposed to get some karma. That said, there are the playtest guide does not include any of those mechanics.
Oh, it does.
I read through the narrator section. I didn't see it, but sure.
Under karma, it says, mm-hmm. there's a bullet point list of how can I get karma, and the last one on the list is one of your negative traits causes you difficulty.
Oh, okay, that's fair then. But then there are a lot that are like not quite negative, where they're
things like weird and alien heritage are just, this does nothing, thanks. It is role play.
Supernatural. Supernatural is a great example. What does supernatural do? Your powers are magical in nature. Okay, so do I get karma when that comes up? If I'm like, oh, I have to say bolts of Balthak before I can shoot fireballs. Do I get karma every time I do that, or no, and this does nothing?
No, because it's not a negative trait, it's a nothing trait.
Exactly, that's weird, and maybe you should rethink, and again, this is my attempt to be constructive during this review. If traits literally don't do anything, not even the karma generation aspect of the negative traits, which again has no actual mechanic behind it, behind if your players mention it and you happen to agree, maybe give them an extra karma point. Maybe you should take these out of the trait list and put them in a different list of some kind, a flavor text list.
Yeah, the thing is, if I choose the background god, and then they're like, your trait is God heritage. I'm like, yeah, no shit, motherfucker. I picked God. Like, you don't need to tell me I have that trait. That's what I picked. If I pick mutant, you don't need to say I have the trait X gene. I'm a fucking mutant.
Now, there are a couple things here. Now, that may be an argument that those should be over in the flavor text, or even that you could leave them in trait and it wouldn't hurt anything because you get them automatically if you pick mutant. Who cares? And I want to cover all the bases. I don't want people telling us we're dead wrong about this. So, yes, let's say you pick Storm and you want to play the whole Storm is the god of weather aspect of her up. So you choose God heritage as her backstory. You can then go in with your couple of bonus traits that you get from being at certain ranks. Like at rank 10, you have two extra traits to choose. And one of the traits you can choose is extra background, where you just go pick another background and get everything from that as well.
Yep.
So you can do that to build characters who have super complicated multiple background sources. That said, it's not going to get you much if you go like, well, okay, I'm playing a Storm. I choose God. I go through. I choose extra backstory. I use it to choose a mutant. That way I get all three of the mutant traits, even though none of them actually do anything, just because I'm supposed to, because I'm Storm. This is a lot of steps you're doing just so you can, like, play your character the way the comic book is.
Yeah. And
it feels unnecessary.
The problem is you also have to go through the extraordinary origin trait in order to get it, because things like God heritage has the restriction gods only. So you literally can't just go, oh, I have, you know, five traits. You know what? I'll just pick God heritage because technically, you know, I'm an alien, but also I'm a god. So whatever. Because yeah. At that point, you're like, nope, you have to spend it on Extraordinary Origin and get everything from God and everything from Alien. You can't pick and choose because they're restricted by type.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. Like, I don't understand those type restrictions, especially when they don't do anything. Like, if all X-Gene does is define you as a mutant, it shouldn't have a restriction on it, because you should just pick it if you would like to be defined as a mutant.
Yeah.
To cover characters who are a god and a mutant at the same time, like, I don't know, Thanos, I'm pretty sure he's like a mutated version of an Eternal or something, right?
Hmm.
I don't remember his super complicated backstory. Who gives a shit? Okay, so after you go through the backstory selection and get those traits, you also choose a profession. This is an excuse for things, you know, a place to put things like journalist, so you can be a Spider-Man or an Eddie Brock. These also just give you some traits.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an extra source of traits, and again, you can take an extra career as a trait from one of your kind of utility traits that you're just given as a bonus. So you can be like, well, I take journalist. That way I can get audience and connections and pundit as traits. And then I'll take extra career, because getting three traits for one trait is a really good deal if you can find some that match up to what you want.
Yes.
There is one profession that I wanted to call out as problematic, at least to me, which is outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not too much to it. The outsider is basically like, you're not from around here. You don't know the way things work. And the three examples that they give us for it are, I believe, Thor, Spider-Man 2099, and Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
And I wanted to point, I thought this was interesting, because this is the only one of these professions that is entirely defined by where you currently are, as uh-huh. opposed to what you are trained in. For example, Rocket Raccoon stories are mostly why am I blanking on the name of the Guardians? Mostly Guardian stories where he is a local. He is not an outsider when he's on the fucking Milano. He knows everything about space.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099, usually lives in 2099, where he is very familiar with things and has a real job. He's a geneticist.
Yeah, you should just have the scientist background.
And Thor is the ruler, or the crown prince of Asgard. He should have the ruler background. The outsider mostly, I mean, it makes sense if you're like, okay, I am heavily defining this story as taking place in New York in 2022, and if you're coming from somewhere else, you should choose the outsider backstory, and I guess choose a different one if you happen to go back to where you live.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't hate the outsider thing. It's fine. It's, you know, 100% you could be like, oh, we're doing a 2099 campaign and you're a character that got like shunted to this dimension. You're an outsider, even though you're normally just like Cyclops. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Sure. Whatever.
Yeah.
The problem is, of the traits that it comes with, you're like, oh, you get fresh eyes. So whenever you deal with something new, you get a bonus. Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You get stranger. So, you know, it's easier for you to, you know, pass yourself off.
You're face in the crowd, which feels really weird for Rocket Raccoon.
Oh no, it's harder to be a face in the crowd because you're weird.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, right.
But the last one is everyone basically has a connections, and yours is connections outsiders. And I'm like, really? Because I don't feel like, you know, me showing up somewhere and be like, I'm a time traveler, and someone's like, I'm a god. Oh, we have a lot in common.
Well, you see, in the far-flung future of 2099, Asgard's on the moon.
Nah, man.
I'm kidding. In 2099, New Adelin is on the moon, and it's defended by the Moon Knight of the Moon.
It's true. And Asgard is on Earth, and people worship Asgardians.
Yes. Yeah. 2099 is a unfortunate place to. It's very 1999 in terms of comic books, so it kind of sucks. But it's a neat setting. I always was kind of partial to it. So anyway, then you have a whole list of traits. Like I mentioned a couple of times in there, you get some traits that you can actually choose for yourself. And obviously, you're going to go through and find the only ones that do anything and take those.
Oh yeah. Now some of these are just ask your GM if you can do something. And it's how they got around several more things of, oh, technically we can't make this character the rank they should be and have the powers they should in the sample characters. So, for instance, Captain America
signature weapon
is a rank 15. You need to be rank 20 to have the shield power at rank 4, the highest level. Of course, they want him to have shield at the highest power, so they just gave him signature weapon. Your shield says you can have one higher rank than you should of the shield power. Done.
Yeah. I'm going to point out again that I don't like that very much. I don't think it's the worst thing ever. It's another thing in this book I'm just going to say would be solved if you flattened this pointless rank math. It just makes the game look like an old 3.5 manual because everything's got 25 levels of pointless granularity.
The other problem I also have, honestly, is signature attack trait. Because
you just pick the attack you use.
Yeah, the signature attack is, you have something that you're known for. You always have an edge when you do that attack. So it means if I'm Cyclops and I'm like, yeah, I picked laser beams, anytime I laser a guy, I automatically have an edge on that roll. You're like, that's everything. And you're like, I know, it's great.
Some of these are better than others.
Yeah, if you're Wolverine and you're like, signature attack claws, thank you very much. That's me, I'll be done. But if you I guess I'm War Machine and I have 27 different signature weapons because I have to do like missiles and guns and blasters and whatnot, you're like, oh, well, you get fucked then.
Yeah, to finish the thought, the thought I was getting at earlier as to why I think signature weapon is a bad kludge, it's because the two primary signature weapon examples they list in this book, which are Captain America and Thor, both routinely change weapons. Like, I know Cap's signature weapon is a shield, and often the shield, but he can do all those tricks with a fucking garbage can lid because he's Captain America.
Yeah, well, he can still do the tricks, he just doesn't get, you know, shield rank 4 then.
Which means he can't use the powers that unlock at shield rank 4 unless he's holding his super special shield.
Well, meanwhile, no, it just means he doesn't get shield rank 4, which is just extra damage reduction.
Sure. And it also comes up with additional questions, like, does Thor have to re-choose these when Mjolnir breaks and he has to use Stormbreaker?
Or doesn't his signature weapon anymore.
Yeah. Or is his signature weapon hammers?
No. Never. It's Thor's hammer. It's Mjolnir.
You have to pick a thing with a name. Okay. Just making absolutely sure. I'm just saying it's an easy fix. There's a few others in there where they're just better than everything else. You can choose things like weird, or you can take combat reflexes and get an extra bonus reaction every turn of the game.
Oh yeah, especially if you're a leader, because the whole like I've got like leadership powers are just full of reactions that do rad shit, and is only really kept in check by the fact that you only get to do one. If you're like, I take tactical mastery, I get an extra reaction every round, and also I'm going to go ahead and take the power that gives me another reaction every round.
Yeah, so the traits definitely have a bit of a thing going on with them, for sure. And after that, it's time to go do your powers. You choose starting characters, like rank 1 characters, will have one power set. And as we mentioned earlier, they go up to 3 power sets you can choose from. There's also a special set of powers called utility powers that don't count as choosing from an extra power list. Yeah, it includes things like being tough or having basic flight.
Yeah, you can fly if you want to, or, you know, you can have additional
limbs. You can leave your friends behind.
I love that fastball special is just a utility power. So
yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. There's a couple powers that have like pithy Marvel joke names, even though they don't show up under characters that would like their example version of Black Panther has "I can do this all day" on it, just because it's a low level fight power or leadership power, I think.
The weird thing for me with fastball special is I'm like, oh, that means you don't have to be super strong to just huck people into people.
No, it's true. But then again, that's always kind of made sense. I mean, you could do, what is the time that Ant-Man gets on Hawkeye's arrow and gets shot at the bad guy, but a fastball special just using a really light guy and a regular strength guy?
A regular guy and a little guy.
Exactly. That's still a fastball special, right?
Sure.
I love how the fastball special has been the thing in like every Marvel role-playing game for all of role-playing game history. Has been like, yeah, we know this is a thing that like Juggernaut and Wolverine did. That was, they're not Juggernaut, Colossus and Wolverine did. That was super cool and was kind of a defining characteristic to them. But what if everyone did it all the time and all called it the fastball special? It's just fun. There aren't the book again, just to make it very clear that this is a playtest guide that we're reading, mentions routinely that there are going to be dozens, probably hundreds more of power set listings than there are in this book. Which is because a lot they kind of feel like feat chains down a shared pool of feats in a lot of cases where you will see powers that repeat themselves. For example, Super Strength is pregnant.
Yeah,
Super Strength
pregnant.
Is pregnant.
Congratulations, Super Strength.
I'm just not as good at this when I'm not looking right at you. I've got a cold and I'm looking at a blank
the
screen.
Miracles. Sonic the Hedgehog got Super Strength pregnant and they're keeping it.
Super Strength is present in both the brawler tree and the spider powers tree, and probably several others.
What you mean is the power Mighty is in Super Strength and spider powers and some other stuff.
Yes, exactly. So you'll see shared powers between them. What the power trees are is chains of powers that are basically prerequisite listings. So, for example, if you're making like a character with energy control, the first power you're going to take is illumination, which is awful. It's just you have you're a flashlight. It doesn't do anything.
If you want to go down that route, yeah, because you can just get an energy beam if you want to get an energy beam.
You can also just start with a blast, and then that will unlock a further blast further down the list, and so on and so forth. And just like all the other lists of chained traits that you see in games like this or FFG Star Wars or what have you, they will connect. So, for example, if you would like to have the highest level of energy beam, then you do need to take that illumination power and all the powers from that chain as well, because they connect at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's a notable lack of things to choose from. I would say, we mentioned earlier, this game has 6 stats in it. There are no powers, traits, trees, backstories, or archetypes that have anything to do with logic at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly, there are no psionic categories. Mm-hmm. I assume as soon as we get the point where they're like, hey, here you go, here's some psionics. This will, I guess, probably use a lot of ego and logic. And you're like, great, sure. Maybe they'll put a gadgets system in here with logic. But as it stands right now, almost everything in here is either going off a fight roll or a ranged roll, and those are both might and agility. Everything is might and agility. If you're playing a character who's like, I pick genius, I shouldn't have done that in the playtest because there's nothing for me here.
Yeah, might, agility, and ego are also the only ones you ever see that modify damage. I mean, you need resilience and vigilance because they modify your health and focus. And focus isn't what it sounds like. It's basically mental endurance. If you get in psionic fights, that's the damage you're taking until you get knocked unconscious by losing focus.
And a few powers you can spend focus to buff the power.
Yeah, that's true. I kept expecting to find one. I'm because my bonus content character was made using energy control, and I was like, oh, okay, this will probably have one where I can dump focus into it to fire like a super beam or something. There isn't a single power in the energy control set that uses focus for a thing.
No, they're usually all in the fight guy power, so like blades and firearms and martial arts have a spend a bunch of power, and you can get bonus damage per power you spend on this punch.
Yeah. And I guess the idea is supposed to be that you're putting everything into this swing, but it'll make you easier to knock out with a psychic attack later.
I guess you're just like, I do a focus strike, and so I channel focus into it. And you're like, great. I guess if you're doing that, you can do some more damage, but Professor X gets to shut your brain off real quick.
All right, well, we're already over an hour. We have a few last things to talk about. Let's see. There is a section of choosing a list of things to help build your character, which is just, you know, classic standard smart role-playing game design. Just fine. You know, choose your real name, your code name, your hair color, distinguishing features. Notably, I feel like it probably goes a little farther into choosing your gender than it needs to for a modern game. It should just put choose your gender or put none. What, you know, that kind of thing. Very simple. But instead, it's like choose male or female. Even characters who are shapeshifters, such as Mystique, who can change gender when they like to, will always have a favored gender, and that is the one you should write down here.
Remember.
And I'm like, binary is a thing. And I'm like, dude, you just don't need to put your foot in your mouth on this one. You could score points with the LGBT community by just putting gender. Put whatever you want.
Yeah. It's the same as all the seduction problems and things in other books where you're like, you don't need to write as much as you think you do. You can just put your gender here and be done with it and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, I don't need your Webster's defines gender as crap. You can just save it. I don't need your old man opinion. So, you know, apologies again, Matt Forbeck. I'm sure you're a very nice guy. But wipe all this gender shit. It's fully unnecessary. Also, we haven't really talked about how damage and combat work in general.
Eh.
There's not much. Let's just take that heat for not discussing the combat system again. No, you roll a vigilance check for initiative.
Yep.
And then you just sort of shoot at each other. There are cover rules. There are ranged rules. But as we mentioned earlier, there are static amounts of damage. They're not static, but you know how much damage you're going to do because it'll be like, well, I'll punch you. I will do my fight damage to you.
Yeah.
And they will attempt to reduce the damage with a defense roll.
Now,
pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Each individual stat has its own defense number.
Yes,
it does. Because I assume they are planning on having things attack all of your various defenses, but, you know, again, as it stands right now, most everything is hitting either a might or agility and occasionally like a vigilance defense.
Yeah, because there isn't really a mental attack trait set yet, so you don't really see anything going after ego or vigilance for the most part.
Yeah, your logic defense is basically honestly, logic is just sort of vestigial at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't end up with this character, so I can mention it briefly, but when I first started out, I hadn't read all the way through the book, and I was like, I'll make a character as I'm going along, and I'll make a genius, because I want to make, like, a wizard-type character. And I had to completely remake the character when I realized there was no wizard stuff.
Yeah, there's no wizard stuff, no psychic stuff, whatever.
That's fine, it's a playtest, but I was like, wait, I've got a super high logic cap and I've invested heavily in logic. What does it do? And by the end of my character build, I was like, the only thing I did with logic was take a trait that lets me use it instead of ego for some roles. Because I, for whatever reason, chose to make my logic higher than my ego. I should not have. Ego does stuff. Logic doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And even then, ego kind of does stuff.
Yeah. So combat's fairly straightforward and simple.
Yeah, everyone's got a modifier that's based on your rank and your archetype, and you just add that to whatever your ability score is. So if you're like, all right, you know, I'm at rank 10 and my might modifier is 9 and I've got a 6 in might, I have a plus 15 modifier. Great.
Yeah,
and at that point, they'll also tell your defense, which you add your score to. So you'd be like, all right, I've got an 18 defense with the 6 might, 24 defense. Done.
Exactly. So it's all fairly straightforward. It feels like a modern game. It definitely has some clunky stuff that feels old fashioned that could very easily be stripped out of here. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You could modernize. It's not too late to modernize this. I mean, I know he was saying, please help me with this playtest. I'm really hoping that everything I'm seeing in here isn't just in the final book.
Oh yeah, I would certainly hope so.
Especially once we get to our bonus characters, because good Lord, let me tell you, I ran into some shit when I was making my bonus character. And if you would like to hear all that shit, well, then why don't you come on down and support us over at the Patreon, and we'll get into the judging in a second, don't worry. Patreon.com/System Mastery, where if you support us at the $1 level, you get our bonus content where we made characters using the playtest engine, and there will, yes, be a lot more thoughts on the playtest engine based on our discoveries when making characters, and that it's just a great way to support us and let us keep doing what we're doing and get you more content. There's other levels you can pledge at, right, John?
Yes, indeed. You can go up to the 2, which gets you all of our Star Wars content as well as all the content for our system mastery stuff. And then, of course, you can go to the 5, gets you everything TV mastery, and it gets you the monthly afterthought, including all of the Discord channels that are locked for patrons. And, you know, it's great. It's a fun time. It's a fun time on Afterthought. Come join us.
Yes, join us and get all of our amazing shows. But to get back to it, John, what would you say was your favorite thing about the Marvel Multiversal role-playing game system, or whatever this is finally called?
I mean, I said it at the beginning, but I do like the 616 idea. I like the idea that, you know, the fantasy of being a superhero, where you're like, my roles are always slightly better than, you know, an average should be on 3D6. Even my failures, 1 and 6, are still gonna give me something good. Like, it is conducive to the fantasy of being a superhero, and I appreciate that as being, it's a good place to at least build from for a core of the game.
Yeah.
What would you say is your favorite thing?
I also said it earlier during the episode, I like that the fight and ranged damage are just stats in your character's character sheet, so you always know how much damage you're doing, and your character can pick up random things off the ground and not feel penalized for doing so, because I always hate it when my character picks up like a pool cue or something and is like, well, that's going to do way less damage than your punch, and you'll be less accurate because it's an improvised weapon, and I gotta look up the breakage table, and I'm like, I don't care. I just wanted to do a cool thing for a second.
I just wanted to say I was cool and did a thing.
Yeah, I like it better when things are fluid and cool. And for me, this fight and range damage thing will accomplish that to a degree. I mean, obviously, there's a bit of a tempering to that based on just how high these numbers are. Like, my bonus content character, on average, kills himself in 3 punches.
Huh.
But other than that, yeah, it's a nice, simple system that really supports your character being fluid with their weapons. Like, they can pick up a gun. Although, good lord, the amount of times that this book moralizes and tells us that real heroes don't use guns.
Ah.
It's every time they mention guns. All the way through the book, whenever they're like, by the way, there's a gunplay tree, there's a gunplay, a couple of traits that relate to it, and every single one of them, over and over and over again, will be like, real heroes, shy away from this tree, because it's not heroic to shoot people. And I'm like, dude, do you know what company you're writing this game for? I feel like I could start rattling off Marvel heroes that carry and shoot guns, and the only thing that would stop me would be running out of breath or dying. I could just do I could do them in alphabetical order. I'd probably start at Bishop and then have to work backwards into the A's. But there's, I mean, I guess Blade would come before. No, Blade comes after Bishop. It's fine.
It's fine. We're all fine here.
Everything's fine. Lots and lots of heroes use guns. It's fine. You don't have to moralize to me. This isn't the 80s and it isn't a chick tract. Stop telling me to to not pick up guns. This is an engine with fucking Taskmaster and the Punisher and shit in it.
Hmm?
At least you don't lose XP for shooting people like in the old one. Anyway, what's your least favorite thing?
Oh, goodness. I think there's a lot of clunky bits in here, like we mentioned. Now, a lot of it I can at least chalk up to playtest in flux stuff, like the, you know, health damage versus physical damage and the damage types and things like that. Like, I get that. That's fine. It's a playtest, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like probably the traits being such a distinct split between flavor and very good stuff that helps you.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you shouldn't put the two things in the same category, because then you're like, oh, well, you know, you've got 5 traits to pick, and you're looking at it and going, yeah, and, you know, it makes sense for my character to have, like, connections black market, but then I'm giving up doing more damage and having an edge on attack and having extra, you know, reactions. And it, yeah, it's my least favorite thing when you start putting the, hey, you have to make a choice between good stuff and character stuff.
Yeah, and not even bad stuff that gets you rewards, just random character stuff.
Yeah, just shit you could have just said it was about your character, but now you have to pick.
Like, I'm not going to lie to you, if I make a weird character in this game, I'm not going to choose the trait weird. I'm just going to write down the ways that my character is weird and play my character weirdly.
And the fact that it's like, weird, ah, yeah, you know, like Captain America. I'm like, no one thinks Captain America is weird. Why does he have the weird trait?
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, there you go. That's mine. What's yours?
My least favorite thing, and I've said it a couple of times through here, I feel like that I don't like the rank system. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to fix it necessarily. I just don't like it. I feel like, I mentioned it earlier, they have mistaken raw power level for narrative contribution power level.
Yeah.
Like Captain Marvel is exactly as contributive to the narrative in a Captain Marvel story as Daredevil is to the narrative in a Daredevil story.
And I think...
And I don't need an extra plus 50 on one of them over the other one because it feels pointless to add that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you really should have, in my opinion, is a more bounded accuracy and defense, with rank giving you more and better powers, or and you know, even having your damage and your health and your focus go up. That way you can be like, yeah, man, you know, Daredevil should be able to hit Captain Marvel. Like, he can throw a baton real fucking accurately and slap her in the face with it. Now, is she going to care? Probably not. And you can go ahead and say, yeah, she has a fuck ton of health. She, like, takes 12 off of her 500 and goes, why?
Exactly. And the problem with it, this game has flattened out the damage math. So if you're like, well, okay, but at least Daredevil could be super smart about it. Like, let's say that he throws his billy club at her and she just takes it because she doesn't care about a billy club. She's Captain Marvel. But he's taped a grenade to it and she doesn't notice. And it does range damage because it does, because everything he does range damage. By the same token, like, it eliminates one of the more interesting factors of cross-comic Marvel stories lines, which is coming up with clever ways to take out the bigger heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, basically what it replaces it with is that feeling you get when you're playing an MMO and you get to max level and you go back to the starting level and stomp on the low-level pigs that are there or whatever. You're like, ah, ha, ha, none of you matter. And what I'm saying is, that's fine. That's great. If you want to have Thor come down to Earth and slap, like, common criminals around, that's fine. But you know what it doesn't need? Rules. It doesn't need any fucking rules. You don't need to make it like, okay, fine, roll to punch the mugger. You have plus 400 to hit, and his defense is 7. I don't need to know that. I don't give a shit. You could just have him go down there and slap muggers around and just say you do that for as long as it's comfortable for you. Are you getting the power trip you wanted? And by the same token, on the other end of that coin, you can be like, all right, fine, Daredevil, you go up into space and you fight, Galactus. Yeah, you're definitely kicking him in the three-story shin a bunch, and it doesn't do anything. But why don't you go ahead and roll it? Roll a 3d6 plus 4 and see if you can hit his defense of 236.
Oh, I got a fantastic result. I do hit him. Great. Good
great
job.
He has a million health. He takes no damage. These rules are mostly there to make high rank characters feel better than low rank characters, and it's not necessary. I don't like it, and I feel like flattening that curve out dramatically is a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you definitely pinpointed that certain of these characters would have a way higher number on the back of their character, their action figure card.
If you hold a little red piece of plastic. Yours is only a 5.
You hold a little red piece of plastic over it, and you're like, wow, Optimus Prime only has a 4 energy projection. That's goodness. That's the level at which this rank feels to me. I feel like I'm a kid comparing the power levels of toys. So, that's my least favorite. Would you play this game?
As it stands, probably not. I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to play a campaign in it. Obviously, it's a playtest. There wouldn't be enough stuff to do that.
Well, this is a tough question. We could probably modify it for a playtest to, do you see potential for a game you would play?
I mean, the thing is, would I playtest this? Sure. I would run through a game of this and see how it works just to get a better feel for, you know, in play are my, you know, complaints and, you know, things that I like actually going to play out the way they look like they should. That's one thing, because it doesn't look like it would be tedious to play. It's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, definitely am looking forward to see what else comes out. And boy, I wish the $10 I paid for this would go towards buying the main rule book.
Yeah, that's very fair. I mean, I would like to see more of this. I would honestly just to confirm my suspicion that I would say maybe half to 60% of this book was written specifically for a deadline to hit a playtest and will likely be ignored when the actual book comes out.
Hmm.
I would like to see if I'm right about that or if I'm just being super cynical.
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like here are the 8 sample characters at the back. I wrote literally all the things that I need for those 8 characters and got it on the page just so I could get this out.
Yeah, I mean, part of it feels like he's working backwards from Affinity. Like, we talked about the Spider-Powers thing, but when you look at Spider-Man and his character sheet in the back of the book, and he's got, like, web-casting, wall-crawling, web-swinging, web-flying, web-shooting, shoot-webbing, shot-webbing, how-do-I-shot-webbing. He has, like, 26 Spider-Powers. You're like, do you need that, or could he just have Spider-Powers, like, ranged and movement?
Nah.
The other funny thing, and this is super minor, not a big deal, I just find it very funny that Spider-Man does, like, almost half again as much ranged damage as he does physical, because his agility is higher than his might.
Yeah, he's super high agility, because obviously he's Spider-Man, but then they're like, oh, that's how you calculate your range damage, so you do a lot of that, do you? And he's like, yep.
And I'm like, but Spider-Man doesn't do a lot of range damage. He's a punchman. He gets in close and he hits you.
Yeah, nope.
Like, yeah, he can shoot those web blaps at you or whatever, and sometimes they knock people backwards or whatever, but that's not his damage source. He's a punchy punchman. And again, that always falls down to Spider-Man being almost impossible to recreate in an engine where you want people to play regular heroes. Because you're like, oh yeah, well, what defines Spider-Man? Oh, he's super agile as a spider. And you're like, neat, that's great. Does that mean that he has to, like, think carefully about his punches because he's not super strong? No, he can pick up a gas station.
This dude throws cars. It's cool.
He's like 10 times stronger than Captain America. Yeah, it's fine. He could tear the Iron Man armor apart if he wanted to with his bare hands. But we're not going to reflect that in his stats, because if we did, he'd be a totally unfair character.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's your answer. We'd both be interested in seeing more of this, although it has a lot of room to improve.
Yes, indeed.
So, come check out our bonus characters. They're going to be over at patreon.com/systemmastery, and I got to tell you, I have a lot to say.
Yeah, there's a lot digging into the actual creation process and picking stuff where you end up going like, huh, okay.
Yeah, I've got a doozy. I can't wait. I feel bad that it's stuck on the other side of the break, but you know what? I got to make my money too. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in a few more weeks with yet more content. Hopefully we'll get to see each other in a few more weeks with more new content.
Hey, hopefully.
And until then, you all have a good one.